This is Power Hour. A production of IrishSportsDaily.com. Your number one source for year-round Fighting Irish recruiting news and more. Visit IrishSportsDaily.com now to sign up for a premium subscription. And now, the host of Power Hour, Mike Frank.
Welcome, everybody, once again to Irish Sports Daily Power Hour. I'm your host, and today we've got some more interviews lined up, and we'll talk about that here shortly. But first, I wanted to mention once again, it's a great time to sign up for IrishSportsDaily.com. You can go to the front page of Irish Sports Daily, click on the subscribe section, and you can get a premium subscription that way. Lots going on right now with Notre Dame recruiting. They're out on the trail, checking out players. There could be a couple commitments coming at some point. Some guys making decisions soon, so we have to chase that down. Of course, we have Irish Invasion coming up, football camp. There's lots going on right now with Irish football, so if you get a chance, go to IrishSportsDaily.com, sign up. Also, if you have any questions about the show, you want to email us or anything like that, you can email us at MikeFrank18@sbcglobal.net. MikeFrank18@sbcglobal.net. We're going to start off today's show with an interview about Notre Dame's first opponent, Temple. We got Mark Narducci, who's on the phone with us right now. He writes for Philly.com and has been following the Owls for quite some time. So we're going to talk to him. Mark, thanks for coming on the show. We greatly appreciate your time.
Good to be here, Mike.
Okay. Now, let's talk. I mean, Jeff Collins, brand new head coach, came from Florida where he was the defensive coordinator. What's it been like so far now that Coach Collins is in the saddle, I guess?
Well, first things first, he was best friends with Matt Rhule, the guy he replaced. So that certainly didn't hurt him in getting hired, because Matt was very, very highly thought of at Temple. So what he's done is he hasn't brought a whole new program. He's kept a lot of what Temple did and just added some things. But one thing about Jeff Collins, he is a very enthusiastic person, and that enthusiasm has rubbed off on everybody. He's made, a really good first impression on the players.
Yeah, that's going to be interesting, you know, because I knew the connection there, and I think that that's a nice, easy transition. You know, Coach Rhule can say, hey, look, this guy's a great coach and somebody I know my whole life. I think that that kind of helps Temple in that transition. You mentioned energy. Is that kind of what his whole MO has been so far?
It is. And even the players are amazed. You know, he's known as a defensive guy. As you mentioned, he was a defensive coordinator of Florida. And that's most of his career has been on that side of the ball. But he made a special attempt this spring to do a lot with the offense. In fact, he even coached the fullbacks this spring, just to show them that, hey, guys, I know I'm a defensive reputation, but I haven't forgotten about you. So he spent a lot of time with the offense this spring. He'll spend more with the defense starting with fall camp, but he just wanted to win everybody over and show them, look, I care about all facets of this team.
All right. Now, he's going to have his work cut out for him. There's only four returning starters on defense. Who are those guys, and what can you tell them about it?
Well, the main guy back, the strongest position on the team is the safety position. They have Sean Chandler, who is a free safety, who will be a senior coming up. And then they have Delvon Randall, 5'11", 208-pound junior, who started. They both started last year. Chandler, I think, is going to be an NFL choice, and it could be a fairly high choice. He was a cornerback his first 2 years, converted to safety because they wanted to take advantage of his big playability. Randall stepped in last year as a sophomore as that strong safety, a very a big hitter. So those guys are back, and they are going to be the leaders of the defense. The cornerback's back as well, Artrell Foster, but he did not play all spring. He was banged up. They say he's going to be ready for next year. Now, they do have to replace all their linebackers, and you might say four starters back. They had some guys, Freddie Booth Lloyd on the defensive line, Michael Dogby, who played a lot, maybe were considered sort of like half starters there. But they also have a lot of guys that have seen time, a lot of time. Sharif Finch, Jacob Martin, they're experienced there in the defensive line. The question is, you know, replacing the production of their ends, Hassan Reddick, who was a 13th overall pick in the NFL draft by Arizona, and Praise Martin Okekwe, who signed as a free agent with the Miami Dolphins after the draft. Those two guys combined for over 18 and a half sacks. So that is going to be a real key on that defensive line, replacing those guys.
All right, so it sounds like Mark Rhule did leave Collins with some talent, though. You think that there's quite a bit of talent on the defensive side?
I think there is. And again, the key about Temple is they had a lot of players who played. And Matt Rhule, when he was here, really liked the young linebackers, and Collins likes them too. But there's a very, very good possibility that they could be starting three sophomores. William Cuenco, Sean Bradley, and Sam Franklin had seen a lot of the first team reps. Now, Jared Foulkes, who did start five games last year in the middle, did not play this spring. Again, he's expected to be ready in the fall, and he'll certainly compete in the middle. But they are going to be a lot more athletic at the linebacker position with a lot of these young guys. And they could almost two platoon. They could go with six guys per game in that position.
Okay. The Owls on the offensive side, it says six returning starters there. Where are those players? What positions do they play?
Well, again, sometimes, like, you have to watch when you're hearing about starters, because technically their main running back, Rykel Armstead, he's not a returning starter per se. He started a couple games. Jahad Thomas, who just signed a free agent contract with the Dallas Cowboys, missed a couple of games. So Rykel Armstead did start a couple, but he mainly came off the bench. But they like to use two guys, and he rushed for 951 yards and 14 touchdowns. So he technically, I don't know if they consider him a starter coming back, but he's certainly going to be one of the main guys on the offense and one of the playmakers. Probably their best receiver, or the best position, is going to be the receiver position. Ventel Bryant, a redshirt junior, he's the leading returning wide receiver coming back. In fact, Broderick Yancey is a veteran, but the other two guys, Keith Kirkwood, who also is going to see some time, believe it or not, at defensive end. He did a little bit during camp this year. And Adonis Jennings, who had a big bowl game against Wake Forest. So they have their top three receivers coming back. They have to get a new tight end, but they have a redshirt freshman named Kenny Yeboah, who can be a big play threat, and they really, really like him. A question is going to be on the offensive line. That's where they have a couple of guys to replace. And one of the guys that's making the most headway, I think, is a redshirt freshman by the name of Matt Hennessy. I think he's going to be their starting center, 6'4", 285, and they feel he can be one of the better centers they've had in quite some time.
All right. So is it two, three guys they're going to replace up front?
Well, yeah, they have to replace Brendan McGowan, their center, and they have to replace their left tackle, Deion Dawkins, who was just a second-round pick of the Buffalo Bills. Leon Johnson, 6'5", 320, who was a right tackle, did not play this spring again due to injury. They think he's going to be back. They like Jalen Robinson. He's a 6'6", 325-pound redshirt junior. He could be playing at that other tackle that they have. Brian Carter, a veteran, has 12 career starts at one of the guards. And really, the other guys that played a lot, Adrian Sullivan, he started all the games last year at guard. He's a 6'3", 303-pound senior, and Jovan Fair, who's just a redshirt sophomore, made 13 starts at guard last year. So they have some guys that have played quite a bit, but I think, you know, replacing Deion Dawkins at that left tackle is going to be a major, major key.
All right. What about quarterback? What's going to happen there? Who do you think is going to come out on top and be the starter next year?
Can I say, first of all, I have no idea, and neither do the coaches, because
sure.
this spring, Mike, four guys have competed. Nobody won the job. Nobody lost it. If you talk to anyone, they like to have a guy who can be a pass run option type of a guy. And the best guy at that would be redshirt sophomore Logan Marchie. He's only 6 foot, 192, and we all kind of thought he was the leader in the clubhouse. In the spring game, he completed 4 of 10 for 92 yards, but he threw 2 interceptions. They have a redshirt junior named Frank Newtile, 6'4", 219, who, again, hasn't played much. He only threw 2 passes last year. Marchie attempted 6, so it shows how inexperienced these guys are. He had a touchdown run and a touchdown pass in the spring game. Then they have a redshirt freshman who everyone thinks could be the eventual quarterback here, Anthony Russo. He originally committed to Rutgers. Then there was a whole coaching situation. He decommitted. He's at Temple. He redshirted last year. He's 6'4", 220, and he probably has the strongest arm of all the quarterbacks. And then there's the most intriguing guy, a guy named Todd Senteo, 6'1", 205-pound, true freshman who enrolled early. So he attended camp, all spring camp, and in the spring game, he was 9 of 13 passing for 110 yards and a touchdown, no interceptions, and he is by far the best running threat that they have. So it's going to be very interesting. And, you know, leading up to the first game against Notre Dame, don't be surprised that Monday if a quarterback still hasn't been announced.
Yeah, that may be the best thing for them to do when it's all said and done. The other thing is there's no real tape as far as what they're going to do offensively. Do you think much is going to change? You know, it was, you know, from what they were doing, what Mark Rhule was doing offensively last year, do you think much will change on the offense this year?
Yeah, Matt Rhule was a coach that liked to huddle up a lot. He loved to use the running game. He loved to run the clock, and they want to do part of that, but they're going to be a little more in hurry-up stuff. They're going to have the quarterback run a little bit more option. Last year they had Philip Walker. They didn't want to get him hurt, and he's a pretty good runner, but he did not run very much. This year I think they're going to do a little bit of that more with the quarterback. And I think the other thing is they're going to be a little more hurry up, not like some of the teams we see in the nation, but a little bit more hurry up. And they've got to take advantage of the receiving core, because those guys are, you know, that's where their most talented players are. It's whether anybody's going to be able to get them the ball is going to be the key.
What's been the main story this spring about Temple? What's been the thing that I guess has been standing out to you?
Just how much everyone's bought into Coach Collins right away, offensive players as well as the defensive players. And, you know, as you know, the media doesn't always get to see the whole practice. In fact, we only see a limited amount. But when you do, they're just flying around there. They're enthusiastic. And I think this is a team that has a very good chance if, and it's a very big if they can get this quarterback situation straightened up. And it is a very, very big deal. And that could be the difference between them competing and defending their championship in the American Athletic Conference or not.
All right, so it's probably too early for you to tell, you know, how they're going to do next year, but what do you think are the two or three things that have to be figured out for them to, as you say, compete? What are the couple things they got to do in order to be able to compete and challenge for that championship again?
Well, they have to get a quarterback who is more than, you know, they want one that's steady. They probably have to get one a little bit more than that. Walker, who, by the way, just signed as an undrafted free agent with the Indianapolis Colts, he set several Temple career records, including most wins, 28, for a quarterback. So he was just so steady, and he was just such a good leader. So that's going to be number one. Number two is going to be, can they get to the quarterback? They have to prove, and they might have to get to the quarterback more from the inside than from the defensive ends. As I said, Freddie Booth Lloyd, Michael Dogby, those guys are loads, and they could maybe put some heat on the quarterback. And the other thing is, I think they can be a better return team this year. They're going to do a better job in the return game. And there's one guy I didn't mention to you, Mike, by the name of Mike Jones. He's a graduate transfer from North Carolina Central, and he's probably going to be be the starting cornerback opposite Artrell Foster, and he's a very, very good return man. He's a guy that there was actually some projection of him maybe getting to the NFL this year as a late-round pick. He felt he needed a little more seasoning. He wants to play against better competition, but he's a guy that could be a real X factor on this Temple team.
All right, folks. Well, you've heard it there. That's from Mark Narducci. Once again, he writes for Philly.com if you want to keep up with Temple and what's going on with that team as the season gets near and Notre Dame gets close to taking on Temple here. Make sure you check out Mark's work at Philly.com, and I'm sure you'll be very impressed with all the coverage that he has there. Hey, Mark, thanks for coming on the show. We greatly appreciate your time.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thank you, Mike.
You bet. Thank you. All right, folks, we're back here with Power Hour, and now we've got on Bill Wagner. If you've been a listener of this show, Bill's been on a couple times for us as well. Does a tremendous job of following Navy as far as the midshipmen go. He's been working for the Baltimore Sun Media Group. Been covering Navy since 2001, so he's been around a long time, knows everything there is to know about Navy football. So, Bill, thanks for coming on the show once again. We appreciate it.
My pleasure. Always love talking Navy football and Notre Dame football.
Now, Bill, we've talked for, you know, a number of times over this, and I'll have to admit, you know, when Paul Johnson left Navy, I thought that this would kind of be a slow slide into mediocrity for Navy, but Coach Ken has really done a fantastic job. Are you surprised that he's able to maintain such a high level of excellence at Navy? You know, a lot of people thought, well, you know, Johnson was the whole reason that this happened, but he's done a tremendous job since Johnson's been gone.
Well, I mean, yes, the answer is surprised at what he's accomplished, because it's beyond anybody's wildest imaginations. He's surpassed Paul Johnson. He has done more than Paul Johnson did. Now, we should always give credit to Paul Johnson, because he is the one that did the heavy lifting. He is the one that had to turn around a program that had really hit rock bottom. They were about as bad as it get. The talent level when he arrived was just, you know, it was Division I AA, maybe not even. I don't think Navy could have competed with the best teams in Division I AA at the time. So, Johnson is the one that had the blueprint for turning around the program. And yes, there was uncertainty with regard to Niumatalolo, because he'd never been a head coach before. He'd merely been a, you know, associate head coach was his title at the time. You know, he was a chief lieutenant to Johnson, but no one knew for sure how he would do running his own program. And, you know, he has proven to be an outstanding head coach, and he has really been innovative and done some things at Navy that maybe Johnson didn't even think of. So a lot of credit to Ken Niumatalolo, winning his coach all time at Navy. That's one heck of an accomplishment right there. And yes, he runs a clean program, an honest, upright program, and also a very sound and winning program.
You know, I almost feel kind of sorry for the guy, because obviously he's a great coach, and I think because of his offensive system, sometimes he's not mentioned for the big jobs. I know, you know, BYU was a name that was thrown around a while ago, and I do think he deserves to be, because you can't be a great head coach at any place unless, you know, you have the kind of results that he's had. He's done a tremendous job. So I know that's a good thing for Navy, but do you ever get the inclination that you know, he is interested in other jobs, or do you think he's a Navy lifer at this point?
Well, it's hard to say. I mean, he has had some flirtations with schools other than BYU. I think, obviously, BYU was the one job that really concerned the Navy fans, because they, you know, he's a Mormon. He's very devoted to his faith. So there was other reasons beyond football as to why he might take that job. And that was a real scare for the Navy fan base. But he's had contact from other schools over the years. I think last year, California showed some interest. So there's been other interest from other schools. I think there was rumors about Minnesota when that job came open. So I think there's a lot of schools that will look at Ken Niumatalolo, but then you mentioned the offense is a key element. If he goes anywhere, he's going to run the triple option. That's the only offense he knows. That's all he's ever been associated with. He would be a fool to try to do something different than what is his identity. So if you're going to hire Ken Niumatalolo, you have to be willing to run some version of the triple option.
What do you think has been really the key to Navy success the past 10 years? What do you think has been the thing that has allowed them to continue to just reload the way they have?
Well, they built a culture. That really is what Paul Johnson did. He created an identity, both offense, defense. They built a culture, and they've recruited to that, both their systems and to their culture. And to the credit of the coaching staff, they have gone out and found the right pieces, and their recruiting has really, you know, it ramped up over the years to the point that they are recruiting pro caliber players. I mean, the last four or five years, every senior class has had a pro caliber player. Of course, 2 years ago, Keenan Reynolds and Chris Swain both ended up in the NFL. This past year, Jameer Tillman, the outstanding wide receiver, received considerable NFL attention. So, I mean, that is a far cry from when Paul Johnson took over, and they didn't even have Division I players, much less NFL talent. So to the Navy's credit, they have really, really ramped up their recruiting steadily over the years to the point they're, you know, they're getting guys that are so much bigger, stronger, faster than they did even a decade ago that it's not even funny. I mean, for me as a beat writer, I have to really think back and remember what Navy players looked like in 2001 and 2002. It's night and day. And then, of course, you know, a coaching staff stability is important, and they have really had a great run of not losing any assistant coaches to other schools.
Yeah. Other than Grantham, they really haven't lost anybody in a while. Now, let's talk about, you know, as far as you mentioned size and things, have they kind of loosened things up a little bit as far as what they can take size-wise, maybe grades-wise, you know, as far as admissions go? Have they done anything different, or has it just been they've done a really just a better job of selling Navy's program?
Yeah, no, nothing has changed. They've getting, you know, Navy had players that were 300 pounds back under George Chomp. They just weren't any good.
Yeah.
You know, it's nothing has changed with regard to recruiting. They still have high standards. Now, of course, a large segment of football players go through the prep school, which, you know, is somewhat of a laundry business in terms of grades. Kids who could never get directly into the Naval Academy are able to do so by attending the prep school for a year. That's the way it's always worked. So a high number of football players, usually 50 to 60 recruits a year, go up to the prep school and then come into the Naval Academy the next year. But, you know, nothing has changed with the Naval Academy. Still high standards. You know, these football players that do get up to 300 pounds have to lose weight. You should see the transformation of offensive and defensive linemen after they graduate. By spring practice, when they come over, I don't even recognize them because they've lost 60, 70 pounds. That's what they have to do for the Navy. They have certain restrictions once they go into the service. They can't be, you know, walking around at 330 pounds in the service. So, you know, that happens after they graduate.
Okay, okay. Once again, folks, we're talking to Bill Wagner of the Baltimore Sun Media Group. Bill, if they want to read your content, where would they go? Where would they find it?
Well, our website is capitalgazette.com, and that's where all of our Navy stuff is posted. And, you know, we have a amazing readership worldwide with the Navy fans. They're very loyal, and so there's the highest read content on our website is the Navy athletics and Navy football in particular.
All right. So let's get into spring football. What's been kind of the story of spring football for Navy?
Well, obviously they have to get a new quarterback ready. Will Worth, as you know from last year's Notre Dame game, did a tremendous job for Navy. He was not supposed to be the starter going into the season. Tago Smith was. Tago Smith goes down in the opener against Fordham, season-ending knee injury. Will Worth takes over. He had been an unproven backup his entire career. No one knew what to expect. And he went and had a Keenan Reynolds-esque type of season. He almost broke some of the records that Keenan Reynolds had set in terms of single-season rushing and touchdowns. Unfortunately, Will Worth's season was cut short by a broken foot that occurred in the American Athletic Conference Championship game. And that put Navy in the very unfortunate position of having to press a sophomore. Zach Aidey is his name. They had to press a sophomore into his first career start against Army, arch rival Army, and it did not go well. Zach Aidey, as one would expect, was a little in over his head. I mean, I don't think anybody wants to make their first career start at quarterback in the Army-Navy game.
Sure.
With all of that pressure. and he threw a couple interceptions, made some bad decisions, just generally did not look ready for prime time. But Zach played much better in the Armed Forces Bowl game a few weeks later against Louisiana Tech. He had about 450 yards of total offense, accounted for four touchdowns rushing and throwing. So he made a dramatic improvement in just from one game to the next. And so I think they feel good about Zach Gaby. But obviously this spring was tutorial 101 for learning the triple option offense because, again, he had not been the primary quarterback, so he was not being worked with by offensive coordinator Ivan Jasper with as much focus as Will Wirth was since he was the starter. Now that Zach is the starter, all of the energy and efforts go into getting him ready to run the triple option offense.
Now, it seems every year that Navy just kind of reloads it, wherever they need to with no problem. It looks just like a cursory look. It looked like maybe they have five starters returning on offense. What's the offensive line situation? How many guys are returning, and how comfortable do you feel with those guys right now?
Right. Well, they did get hit hard on offense, and particularly in the skill positions. They lost the starting fullback, Sean White, Jameer Tillman, who's probably the best wide receiver in the triple option era. He is a huge loss. They lost both of their starting slots. So they got to hit hard in the skill position areas. I don't think they're as worried about the offensive line because they have several returning offensive linemen that have starting experience. The players that started last year were Andrew Wood was the right tackle, and Evan Martin was the right guard. Evan Martin actually graded out as the best offensive lineman in terms of performance last year. So, you know, getting him back, he's kind of the anchor now of the offensive line. And they did lose three starters, but they have players with starting experience to fill into those spots. For instance, at center, Parker Wade began last year as the starting center, and he started three games, and then he lost his job to Maurice Morris because Maurice Morris was kind of a bigger, more, you know, he was better at the point of attack. But Parker Wade is a solid center who with starting experience. So I don't think they're at all worried about Parker Wade as the starting center. And then they're getting a guy back from injury at left guard. He missed all of last season with an injury, and he'll just smoothly step right into that left guard position. And then they've got they're really high on their new left tackle. His name is going brain dead here for so Jake Hawk. Hawk, he's huge, 6'6", 310 pounds. It looks exactly like you would want a left tackle to look, but, you know, he's a little bit inexperienced. He is the one guy who really doesn't have starting experience, but last year he was the third tackle, and he came in and relieved the starting tackles at points during the game. So he has legitimate varsity game experience. So I think they feel pretty good about the offensive line.
What about, you mentioned skill, and obviously you've got a quarterback, you don't know what's going to happen there, but sounds like they lost a lot of skill talent as well. What do you think about those players that are challenging place? Anybody stand out you think can be a real weapon for them?
Right, well, that's where Navy's been able to reload. I mean, they know that they need slot backs and fullbacks are the primary ball carriers in this offense, so they recruit very deep at those positions. Navy always has 10 fullbacks on the roster. They have 15 slot backs. So the depth at those positions is remarkable. So they graduated at slot back. Their starting slot backs were Tony O'Gully and Dyson Romine. And I think, Dyson Romine was kind of the game breaker. He was the speed guy. Tony O'Gully was more of a do-it-all blocker. He could run the ball well also, but Dyson Romine was the man at slot back. And they also graduated a third slot back named Calvin Cass Jr. So they lost three good guys, but they do return Daryl Bonner, who last year ended up being kind of the game breaker guy, type of guy at slot back. I think he averaged something like 15 yards a touch, whether it was a reception or taking a pitch, but he was a big play guy. In fact, they started calling him Big Play Bonner. But so Daryl Bonner moves right into being the number one go-to guy at slot back. And, they have other guys that with experience. That's kind of a position where they just, move the next guy up and expect that that person is going to perform. And over the years, that has been the case. Fullback, Chris High will be the starting fullback, and he started half the games last year. He kind of lost the job at the end of the season to Sean White because Chris High got injured. He had an ankle injury, and Sean came in and did a really good job. But Chris High is a proven commodity, a very good fullback. So they've got an A-plus fullback. Now, what I think they're looking for is some depth at fullback because they will use two fullbacks in every game, if not three. And that is where they have a little bit of concern because there's no proven entity behind Chris High. But in terms of starting fullback, Chris High is legit. Then wide receiver to me is somewhat of a question mark. This Jameer Tillman was the go-to guy for three seasons. I mean, this guy was a big-time talent. 6'4", 212 pounds, ran great routes, caught everything that was thrown to him. And that has been their guy. If they threw, they were usually throwing to Jameer Tillman. And they, on paper, there does not appear to be a ready replacement for him. Someone is going to have to step up at the wide receiver position and show that they can get open downfield and catch passes. They have a blocking wide receiver, Tyler Carmona. He was considered the other starting wide receiver last year, but he really plays a tight end position. They move him in close to the line of scrimmage when they run what they call a jumbo package. In essence, he becomes a tight end, and he's a blocking role. So he's not really a pass-catching threat. So they have Carmona back, but again, Carmona is more like a tight end.
Okay. Now, when teams have stopped Navy's offense here in the recent past, what have they done? What have they done to slow them down and make it difficult for them?
Well, there's so many different ways that teams think they can stop the triple option, and normally it comes down to this. If Navy executes, the offense can't be stopped because that's the whole point. So many different options. If you try to take one away, you get beat with the other. But the teams that have beaten Navy tend to stack the line of scrimmage. They basically dare Navy to throw. They put 10, 11 guys in the box and just say, we are going to sell out and stop the run. And if you're going to beat us, you have to throw the ball. And Navy has successfully beaten teams by throwing the ball because you end up with one-on-one coverage, if no coverage in some cases. If your safety is selling out for the run and they send the slot back down the middle, he's wide open. There's nobody there. So, but the real way that I have found over all the years that I've covered the triple option, the number one way the teams beat them is by dominating the line of scrimmage. Teams that have great defensive linemen who just overwhelm Navy at the point of attack, they ruin the triple option because they collapse the line, they get penetration, and everything breaks down. If you can stop the triple option before it even gets going, that's the key. So, there's been several defensive linemen who I can name who single-handedly disrupted the option. One was Stephon Tuitt of Notre Dame back when they played Navy in Ireland. He absolutely destroyed his blocker. He was in the backfield the whole game. And it just throws off the triple option. If the quarterback faces the fullback and then goes to run down the line of scrimmage and finds himself running into a defensive end, the option gets stopped. So what I have found is dominant defensive linemen cause the option problems.
Bill, you and I know this. And I've watched a lot of football growing up in Nebraska, a lot of option football. You know that. It amazes me that Notre Dame can't seem to figure this out. When you penetrate against the option, when you get guys in the backfield, it's dead in the water. For whatever reason, Notre Dame for years just did not seem to grasp that concept. And I think that that's part of the reason they continue to lose this game. So I think Navy does a great job against Notre Dame and has
right.
for years.
They do. Well, and another way to a guy that gave Navy trouble for the last 2 years was Tulane's Tanzel Smart. He just got drafted. But he is a dominant nose guard. And when you got a guy inside who is shoving your center into your backfield, everything gets thrown off. There's a timing to this thing. Everything has to work like clockwork. The quarterback takes the snap from center. He either hands the fullback or he fakes the fullback. Then he runs down the line of scrimmage, and he tries to either keep the ball or pitch. If you do something to disrupt the timing of any one of those elements, you have suddenly caused the option problems.
Amen. And I've seen it for years, and I agree 100%. Now, defensively, you know, they look to be in really good shape. It looks like they have 8 starters returning. Who are some of the better players on this defense?
Well, they've got some good linebackers. The number one guy inside is Micah Thomas. They've got a very, very good inside linebacker. Micah Thomas led the team in tackles last year. He moved into the primary middle linebacker spot. Daniel Gonzalez, who was the other inside linebacker to begin the season, got injured. So they moved Micah into what they call the Mike linebacker position. And so he is an outstanding inside linebacker. They've got an outside linebacker named DJ Palmore, who's the defensive captain now. And he is a tremendous penetrator. He can come off the edge and give pressure the quarterback, get tackles for loss. He led Navy in both sacks and tackles for loss last year. So DJ is very good. And then they have some secondary players coming back that, you know, are pretty proven. Sean Williams is one safety who's pretty good. And Alohi Gilman, last year as a freshman, he was the ECAC Freshman of the Year. He had an outstanding freshman campaign. So I think they've got two good safeties. Question marks are cornerbacks. You know, last year their cornerbacks got picked on. They were young and inexperienced, and you know, there are some teams abuse them at times. Now the hope is that these young guys have grown up and they'll be better just based off experience. And then up front, they've got a new nose guard. Navy plays a 3-4 defensive alignment. In order to succeed that way, you need a nose guard who's going to kind of control the point of attack, maybe take on a double team and prevent guys getting from the linebackers. You don't want to get blockers on the linebackers. And so they lost a very good nose guard. And Patrick Forrestall was the starter last year and did a good job. And so this year they're looking at a kid named Jackson Pittman, who's a sophomore, and he looks the part. He's a big kid, 300-plus pounds, and pretty talented, but, you know, he's unproven. He didn't play a lot of snaps last year. So Jackson Pittman's got to step up. And, you know, they also lost a very good defensive end in Amos Mason. But I do think they believe that this kid, Jarvis Polu, who started last year, has got the ability to be a good edge player. So they do have some question marks on defense. They have more returning starters on defense, but, you know, that was a defense that got shredded for the most part last year, gave up an awful lot of yards and points. So they got to improve. They need guys to step up and play better than last year.
That's really the key. That's what I've noticed with Navy for years, is when they have their best teams, it's they have dominant defensive linemen, guys who can really play. And so that's kind of, I guess, my question would be, you know, do they have those guys? And more importantly, do they have the depth? You know, can they bring guys in that can take the pounding? I think that's usually the difference between an 8-win Navy team and a 10-win Navy team.
Well, and also experience. I mean, when Navy has had inexperienced defensive players, they've had problems. And, you know, I can remember a few years back when Paul Johnson was still around, they had a very young group. They were starting a lot of sophomores and freshmen in the secondary, and that was the year that they gave up an ungodly amount of points. One game they lost, I'll never forget the North Texas game that Navy won 76-72. But that same group of players 2 years later was pretty doggone good, and names like Wyatt Middleton and Kevin Edwards beat Notre Dame at Notre Dame Stadium. So those kids that struggled as sophomores grew up and became pretty good players. So to me, Navy's defense is good when they have experience.
Okay. Next question for you, Bill. Why do you think Navy's players get so excited to play Notre Dame? Is that something that's stressed by the coaching staff? Do you think it's the recent success they've had? It just seems like, other than, gosh, really only Army, and I know they probably get up for Air Force too, but I'd say its intensity's probably matched. I mean, it just seems like, for whatever reason, Navy is always ready to play this game.
Well, it's one of the most important games on the schedule. You just, based off tradition, this is one of the few opponents, along with Army and Air Force, that they've played every year for 100-some years. So, you know, this is a traditional game on Navy schedule that means a lot to the entire program. And kids get recruited they're told when they're recruited, you're going to get to play Notre Dame every year. I mean, that is a major recruiting lure when you can say that one of the most storied programs in the history of college football is on the schedule every year. That is something the coaches use in recruiting. So these kids come here excited to play Notre Dame, And, you know, then they get involved with the game and see how incredible it is. And it's always a great atmosphere. You're playing in an NFL stadium when it's Navy's home game. You're playing at Notre Dame Stadium when the Irish are hosting. So it the atmosphere speaks for itself. And so that, no, there's no question that that game ranks right alongside Air Force and Army as one of the most important on the schedule every year.
Last question for you, Bill. What do you think is the future for Navy football? You know, they talk about, you know, super conferences and things like that, that I would think would not necessarily help Navy's, you know, football chances of remaining relevant, that type of thing. What do you think about their future as a football program?
Well, right now the future looks pretty good. They're well positioned in a very good conference, the American Athletic Conference, and you know, we didn't mention that over the course of this conversation, that was a huge move for Navy, going from independent to joining a conference. And there were some naysayers who didn't think it was a great idea. Well, it's turned out to be a tremendous idea. It's helped everything across the board, recruiting, exposure, the television they're getting. So, and I think the American Athletic Conference is a doggone good conference. There's a lot of good schools in that conference, and they are pushing to be what they consider a Power Six conference. That's the narrative that they're pushing, that they're right there on the cusp of being as good as the Power Five. And, you know, results have proven that the next best conference in college football beyond the Power Five is the American Athletic Conference. That's the conference with the next best group of teams. And so Navy's pretty well positioned in that conference. Now, if something were to happen that further distanced the Power Five from the what they call the Group of Five, and that if the American Athletic Conference could not succeed in their efforts to be considered a Power Six conference, then I guess things could change. But for now, in the short-term landscape, the American Athletic Conference is right there, considered one of the better conferences, and that's helped Navy tremendously. You factor in that their other three games are Army, Air Force, and Notre Dame, all of which have their own drawing power, and Navy's in better shape than it's ever been.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And it's been fun watching them, and I respect the heck out of them when they come and they play so hard. You know, they just really lay it out on the line, and it's very fun to watch guys like that compete at that level. So, Bill, want to say thanks. You've always been wonderful having you on. You're just such a knowledgeable source on Navy. We greatly appreciate your time, and thanks, and we'll probably talk to you before the season or before the game this season, okay?
Well, I have one last question for you, because there's been a little bit of consternation among Notre Dame opponents about this new visitor's tunnel.
Sure.
That looks like a tomb of some sort, and and it looks like you've got to walk up like 25 steps to get up there. What is preventing a visiting team from just going out of the locker room doors the way they always did and going through the main tunnel? That's what gets me. Who says they have to take this new tunnel to get to the field?
That's a very good question, and I don't even have the answer to that. Maybe you just started something.
Right. Well, I mean, it just dawned to me. Everybody's making a lot of big deal about this new tunnel. Well, I'm sure that the visiting locker room hasn't been moved, and the double doors to the visiting locker room still go toward the main tunnel.
Yeah.
So who says you have to take the visitor tunnel to get to the field?
Well, that's going to be the interesting thing. That's a very interesting point. I never really even thought about that and or considered it. I assume Notre Dame will request, but that doesn't mean that teams have to comply.
Right. Yeah, you know? I don't like that visiting tunnel, I'm telling them, I'm coming out the old tunnel the way I always have. Are you going to put police officers there to prevent my team from walking out the main tunnel?
It's going to be interesting. I never even thought about that. That's a very good insight, Bill.
Well, I've been to Notre Dame Stadium a million times, and I've always walked up that main tunnel to get to the locker room, and I know where the visiting locker room sits. And
just on the other side.
My thought was all this consternation about, well, now we have to go out this new visiting tunnel that is so tight, and who says you have to walk out that way? Just if you don't like it, go out another way.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I haven't even thought about that. Very all good right. thought. Hey, thanks for the time, Bill. Appreciate it. Take care.
Okay.
Bye. All right, folks, once again, that was Bill Wagner of the Baltimore Sun Media Group. We're going to finish out the show with just a quick conversation I'm going to have with Jamie Uyama, my good buddy up there in Canada. Yeah, over the weekend, we got news that Kalen Gervin decommitted from Notre Dame. And so I just kind of wanted to get Jamie's thoughts on this and where Notre Dame heads after this. You know, Jamie's watched film of corners. I've watched some film of corners. And, yeah, Jamie, this, I mean, really, the last four guys who have committed to Notre Dame, all decommitted. And, I mean, I don't know what the answer to this is. This should be a very easy sell. We've talked about it on Power Hour, really, the last few weeks, that there aren't anybody. I can't really point to anybody and say, that guy's leaning towards Notre Dame right now that's a corner. And I realize Notre Dame's going to sign corners. They're going to get somebody because they have to. They don't have any other choice. They'll just keep going down the list until they fill out the needs they have. But what worries me is what kind of talent that's going to be when you didn't get any last year and, you know, they're not in on a lot of four-star guys right now. It's just a little bit of a concern for me.
Yeah, I think you don't want to get into a desperate situation where they have to take bodies just to take bodies. And I think what's got everyone so frustrated was that the guys that they lost last year and Gervin this year, those guys are good players. Like, yeah, they're going to be, you know, chances are most of those guys are going to be really good players at the next level. And I mean, if you even if you take a look back at, I know they landed the three corners in 16, but if you go back to 15, you know, they had Nick Coleman, Ashton White, both moved to safety, and Sean Crawford, you know, has been hurt. So, yeah, they got some real problems at corner, and I you know, and you know, like you said, Mike, with in terms of where they are at in with offers and guys that they lead for, they're this is a really good class in terms of the top level talent at corner, but those guys right now aren't leaning towards Notre Dame. I guess you could say that Notre Dame's in the mix for Houston Griffith, but I don't think it's a slam dunk at all that they're going to land him. You know, Ohio State's still after them. And I mean, Ohio State's a tough school to turn down, the way, especially the way that they've put corners into the league in recent years. I think they've had, you know, three corners in the last two drafts go in the first round. So that's tough to combat, right? So, and you know, really Houston Griffith too might be a guy who end up moving to safety too. So, It's a bit concerning. I think, you know, Derek Allen, you know, the safety they have committed, he's a guy who's played a bit of corner too, and maybe he could be a big corner, but he's already like safety size for college football. So the way he's growing, I mean, he could even maybe even grow into a rover possibly. So I think, you know, you don't want to project him to cornerback. You know, they just sent out an offer to DJ Johnson, a kid out of Indianapolis, who's, you know, is a pretty solid player, but I mean, I don't think he's at the level. I mean, he's the guy I wouldn't rate at the same level as Gervin and some of these other guys. You know, he's a high 3-star, low 4-star type kid, but I mean, they must have been impressed with him. They offered him in, after seeing him in person, but he's a guy who plays a lot of cover three bail a lot. You don't see him play man coverage quite a bit, so I think the, you know, the jury's a little bit out on him. And then if you look at some of the other guys, they just haven't had those guys on campus to, you know, where you kind of feel good about any of these guys. Like, I think, you know, Cook is obviously a stud kid out of Texas, but he put him in the top 10, but he hasn't been to campus. You know, Kyler Gordon, good player out of Washington, 4-star kid. You know, he could be a really good player, but I think Washington and Stanford are up there for him, and he hasn't been to campus. I don't know. It's hard to find the, you know, they've have a couple like backup plans in terms of Eric Hallett is a guy they've had on campus that was, you know, doesn't have a great offer list. I think he's probably a little bit underrated, maybe be a good player, but, you know, he's probably a guy you kind of watch in camp and kind of see where they're at. So it's they definitely have to be in scramble mode because you know, Todd Light told you on signing day, Mike, that they need to take at least three corners, and right now, you know, they're at zero. So it's pretty concerning.
It just doesn't make any sense. It really doesn't, because you can basically go to anybody you're recruiting right now and say, look, if you come here by your sophomore year, you're going to play. If for no other reason, we don't have anybody. We literally have nobody on the roster. So you don't even need to be good and you're going to play. I mean, it's just, it's mind-blowing. It really is. And I don't know. I mean, I don't know, you know, whether Todd Light is an issue, you know, but look, when you got four guys who said they want to come here and then all four of them just leave, that doesn't make any sense to me. It just doesn't make any sense other than after these guys committed, you know, they weren't either shown the love or they weren't, there wasn't good communication or whatever the case may be. You can't lose four guys at the same position, especially, Jamie, when you know that it's so important that you land these guys this year. I don't know how you fix this. And it's one of these things where I know a lot of people, oh, they'll get guys. Yeah, they'll get guys. Of course they're going to get guys. They don't have any other choice but to get guys. But, you know, they can offer me a scholarship right now, and I'll take it. Right?
Yeah.
But does that solve any problems? Can I go run with the best receivers in the country? No. And that's what it boils down to, is what level of talent do you have to go down to at this point because you didn't get the guys you needed? So this is a big concern. It really is. And I don't know what the answer is. I really don't know what to think. Anybody that's kind of a underrated guy that you think, you know, might be worth pursuing, you know, anybody you can point to that, you know, Notre Dame's offered or is in, I guess, close to offering that you think, you know, maybe this guy's underrated and could be a player for us?
Well, I mentioned that Hallett kid. He's a kid who, you know, has been on campus. He doesn't have a great offer list right now, but I think he's probably someone who's going to get a bunch of offers this month, you know, accumulate quite a bit this month and over the summer. So might be a good idea to get in early on him. I think he's probably a much better kid than, you know, his rating actually reflects. Another kid, Jacqueline Crawford, he's a four-star kid. He's an athlete, could play offense, but I mean, if Notre Dame landed him, I'm sure they'd want him at corner. Another kid out of Texas who I think put Notre Dame in his top eight. It's just a kid. They got to get him on campus. You know, they got to get him on campus, in June or July, right? If you want to have a shot at him, you want to get an official from him. You got to take a look. I think there's guys out there right now, that, I mean, I would love to see them offer. I don't know if they'll be able to jump in the mix, but we'll see. Like there's a kid out of Georgia, JC Horn, you know, really four-star kid. I mean, he's got offers from all over the South, but it doesn't look like he's really honed in on anyone yet. You know, I'd love to see them kind of jump in the mix there. He's a very, very good prospect. Another kid who's a Duke commit, who committed to Duke last year, this Tayon Palmer kid, is another kid that I really, really like. You know, he's been starting to get more offers, and I don't know if he'll listen, but, you know, considering he's a Duke kid, you know, you would have to think that he probably has the grades, probably is, you know, has a similar academic fit that he's looking for. So that's a kid I would love to see them offer. But, I mean, they've offered a ton of guys. I think, you know, they have like close to 20 or so that they've offered at corner. They're just not getting enough traction with the guys that they're offering. And I mean, I think if they were, you know, in the lead or close to it for in contention for maybe four or five, you'd feel really good. But they just got to keep, you know, digging and keep searching for more because and work harder to get the other guys on campus because, you know, they're not making any traction.
I'll tell you this, Jamie, if we can't get to Irish Invasion and there's, you know, 7, 8 2018 kids, you know, out there that are competing and trying to earn an offer, that would be just a tremendous fail on the coaching staff's part. You know, at this point, it's an absolute must that you get kids there that can compete and you can take a look at and get them on campus. So that's where I think they got to go. You know, they got to try and get them on campus and get some buzz going, and hopefully they can. So, you know, they got about a month to get some people going, and hopefully they can get them on campus and this problem will be fixed. But right now it's very concerning.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right, too, about Invasion. You hope that that's a big, big time for them to get people on campus. And then even then, the position camps after that, too. I know they've kind of targeted some guys and offered some guys after that. But I mean, if you're not landing the top guys, find guys that you think have the traits to become the top guys, because, you know, they've obviously did a pretty decent job of that at Wake Forest. They, you know, they weren't landing their top of the board guys because those top of the board guys were going elsewhere. So, I mean, you don't want them to go to plan B. You want them to sign all, you know, 4 or 5 star kids if they can, but if that's not an option, you gotta find the guys who can have the potential to develop into those kind of guys at the next level.
All right, Jamie, thanks for the time, man. We'll talk with you soon, okay?
Thanks, Mike.
All right, bye. All right, folks, that's going to be it for Power Hour this week. Wanted to remind everybody that we will have a Thursday Recruiting Power Hour, so make sure you tune into that. Also, if you have any questions for us, you can email me at mikefrank18@sbcglobal.net, mikefrank18@sbcglobal.net. We'll take your questions as well. Or if you have any questions about advertising with the podcast, whatever it may be. Thanks for listening. We will talk to you next week on Power Hour.
This has been Power Hour, an exclusive production of IrishSportsDaily.com. Don't wait. Sign up now for a premium subscription for IrishSportsDaily.com for year-round recruiting news and Notre Dame coverage. For more on the Fighting Irish, visit IrishSportsDaily.com now. And to listen to archived Power Hour podcasts, visit iTunes.
That's a good one.
Power Hour, exclusively on IrishSportsDaily.com.